Welcome to the program for Friday, September 7th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. We do it every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour on In Depth with Francis Rose. My experts today are Dan Mintz of PowerTech Corporation. Good to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Always glad to be here.
And John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. It is good to see you also.
Always a pleasure.
It's like a Nats clatch here today. All of us enjoy talking about the Washington Nationals, but that is not the purpose for which we're here today, unfortunately. We're here to talk about the stories that each of you have selected as the three most important of the week. And we start with, of course,
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week, as selected by John Desenberg, is from CNN. The story is headlined, GSA workers racked up $7.7 million in travel costs. And this is just kind of a continuation on what we've seen at the General Services Administration pretty much since springtime, John.
Yeah, and as some of you know, I think, Francis, you know, I worked at GSA for a number of years, enjoyed it, worked on a lot of hardworking, dedicated people. And I didn't pick this story really to hone in on GSA. I think there's been enough negative focus on them. What I wanted to talk about is, I think, the somewhat of a backlash that I think we need to worry about when it comes to telework. Telework, we all, I think, are in agreement, or many of us are in agreement, that it can be a very productive way for employees to work. It can save money. It can help the environment. There's a lot of pluses, but I think in the back of people's minds, including managers, there was always this fear that it could somehow kind of get out of control and you could end up, you know, employing someone, for instance, in Hawaii, who supposedly was working in Kansas City. You know, and it's those kind of what I would call kind of abuses that I think the taxpayer and some federal managers were always a little worried about. And there was some trepidation about telework. And you've seen it in kind of the slow rates of telework. It's gone up, but it hasn't gone up that fast. It's pretty good at GSA. GSA was always held up as kind of the poster child for telework, along with PTO and a few others. But other agencies, you heard managers say, I'm not so sure about this. I don't know if this is really a great idea. And I think this adds fuel to the fire. Now people who were worried about the cost and the efficiencies of telework have something to point at and say, you know, we need to slow down on this. I'd like to see my employee at work. We don't need people jetting in from far reaches of the continent to get to the office. This can quickly spiral out of control. You know, there's unintended consequences when you push real hard in any one direction. And I think that may have happened here. I hope it doesn't cut down on what I would call positive telework. But we've got to watch things like this to make sure they don't get out of control, especially with the amount of scrutiny the federal government's under right now.
I think you are right that this gives people who are predisposed toward not liking telework another excuse to say this is a reason why we shouldn't do it. The other element here regarding your former agency, GSA, though, John, is the appearance that this creates issue after issue after issue. It makes Dan Tangerlini's job, I imagine, just dramatically more difficult, exponentially more difficult. You know, I circulated a news story that I found in a general news outlet yesterday about an employee at GSA who was going to throw herself a birthday party. And the bottom line was she was going to pay for it herself. The thing got canceled. It wasn't really a story.
No.
And the reason that I circulated it among my colleagues here was just to say, to remind ourselves that just because a particular agency's name is in a piece of information doesn't necessarily make it news. And we wound up not reporting on it because there's not really anything to it.
Right.
But the names of these agencies can turn into dog whistles that make people just go, you know, look up and go, huh, whenever there's something.
And it's especially tragic at GSA because people didn't even know what it was, and now it's only known in a negative way. And since I worked there, I haven't talked about it on the air, but this is not something new. Unfortunately, this agency has been, they've had problems with the previous administrator and the previous political administration, and it goes back, there have been scandals into the 70s and the 60s. It's had a very rough go of it, and it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. But you're absolutely right. The word GSA should not be purely negative, for sure.
The third most important federal news story of the week, selected by John Desenberg, is from CNN. The story is headlined, GSA workers racked up $7.7 million in travel costs. Dan Mintz, your third most important federal news story of the week is headlined, Management Successes Paving the Way for One DHS. It is Jason Miller's story about our conversation with Rafael Boris, the chief management undersecretary for management, at DHS. And what was it in this particular conversation that struck you as particularly significant?
Well, first of all, DHS has been, when it was put sort of cobbled and put together, has been a source of dysfunction in terms of how the various agencies that were put into it work together. And that's been a problem for a long time. So most of the articles you read about DHS and their management and their culture and how they spend money and how they work have almost all been in the negative. And what struck me about this article is, for once, was an article that actually had a positive or the beginnings of a positive story that DHS has started to really work through these kinds of cultural and organizational conflicts in order to make DHS-wide decisions. It's reasonable that one of the places, you know, the budget drives focus. So in this case, this one DHS effort was done around acquisition. And they use what they called a PARM, a Program Accountability and Risk Management function, to be able to manage both risk and the status of various programs. And so that struck me. That was, I thought, a really positive thing to talk about.
During this conversation with Mr. Boris, Jason and I talked about the fact that they had done a tremendous amount of work there to try to do exactly what you're talking about. And the thing that struck me was, when you have 22 different agencies and 22 different ways of doing pretty much everything, the idea of going into one of those organizations and saying, the way that you're doing it, we're not going to do it that way anymore, that's not the only message that someone hears, no matter how you present it. The message that people hear, culturally at least, not necessarily managerially, but the thing that people hear culturally is, the way that you're doing it is not sufficient. The way that you're doing it's not good enough, and somebody else is doing it better, and we're going to start doing it their way. Now, that's not the message that anybody ever intends, I don't think, but it certainly is the message that people hear. And so that's one of the big hurdles that he talked about trying to get over.
Yeah, there are lots of reasons why change is hard. Now, you've brought up one reason, but the reality is there are many other legitimate reasons why this kind of change is difficult, one of which is the one you talked about. It's in a sort of an indirect attack on the self-worth of the person doing it. Some of it is just, you know, people become comfortable. Their career paths are based on doing something particularly well. Now they're going to have to do something that's different that they may or may not be able to learn. In addition, change is often just that, change. That is, it doesn't necessarily improve anything. It's just different. And so therefore, you end up investing a lot of effort in things that do not relate to the mission, but instead relate to changing the process. And your requirements to support the mission don't go away. So it has all these negative things. And one of the complications, and it's particularly true in the government, not because the people aren't wonderful, they are wonderful, it is that the incentive to change is not always as present as it is in the private sector, where if you don't change, sometimes everyone loses their job. In the government, you don't have that kind of lever. DHS has a particular problem because the budget authority has been historically so spread out that there's no central place that says, I want you to be more efficient. In fact, it works in the reverse.
Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. My conversation, along with my colleague Jason Miller, with the Undersecretary for Management at the Homeland Security Department, Rafael Boris. You can read that, and you can hear my conversation with Jason and with Mr. Boris, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All of our stories in the countdown today are listed there, too. And when we come back, the second most important stories of the week, as selected by John Desenberg and Dan Mintz on this week's week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Associated Press is reporting the U.S. is ramping up its presence at Syria's Turkish border and sending more spies and diplomats to help advise the rebel forces in their fight against the Syrian regime and to look out for possible al-Qaeda infiltration in the rebel ranks. The AP says U.S. officials briefed on the plan say the surge in U.S. personnel in the past 2 weeks has helped the rebels get politically and militarily organized. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over a million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Sparco.com's past performance ranks them with the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. They hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies with budget-sensitive pricing. They are an IBM-certified premier business partner for servers and storage solutions, and their offerings include IBM software product lines such as licensing and renewals. Because they understand your needs, they have extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please call 1-800-840-8400 or visit sparco.com. SPARCO.com.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
A pay raise for federal employees is officially on hold. President Barack Obama says he will give feds a 0.5% pay increase in 2013. The catch? They'll have to wait until after any continuing resolutions expire. Congress is expected to pass a six-month CR to fund agencies when it returns to Washington in September. That means feds will have to wait until at least April to see any extra money in their paychecks.
WEPA, a nonprofit association, has just announced another 25% premium refund. Since 1996, WEPA policyholders have received 16 annual premium refunds totaling over $65 million. WEPA also offers life insurance at rates far less than the Fegley program. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. A joint effort between the Justice and Interior Departments aims to streamline and improve law enforcement in Indian Country. The government wants to end a cycle of violence, and an experienced Washington hand explains why it's not too early to prepare for the next administration, no matter who wins the election. Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Dan Mintz and by John Desenberg. And we're up to
number two.
Dan Mintz's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Amazon Kindle Fire and Kindle Fire HD set new lows for tablet prices. There's a lot here, Dan, and I wonder, is the fact that the price points are set where they are, what strikes you as the most important thing about this story?
No, but it is a little bit of relevance to it. So I might just touch on one thing, and then maybe we could talk about the broader issue. The interesting thing on the price point, because they mention in here that they have a low-priced alternative. This e-reader costs $69, you're able to read well on these kinds of things. And their Kindle Fire, which is the sort of the step up, starts at $159. The relevance of that price point is that for certain many kinds of consumer items, there is a price point below which it becomes almost an impulse buy, that people don't say, do I want it or don't I want it? It's just mostly I'll buy one of those. And different things have different levels. So, for example, Apple discovered that if you sold music at 99 cents a song, they suddenly became the biggest record, music produced seller in the world. Well, those prices are in that level. People will buy that they buy it as a Christmas present or something like that. So I think that is significant. The tablet, the 7-inch and screens and the smaller tablets are moving into the price point where it'll become a device everyone has.
The part of this that I thought was the most significant is the part that it doesn't involve the hardware. The service that goes along with this, and Jeff Bezos said when he introduced it the other day that the Fire is a service, the Kindle Fire, but the fact that you can get a data plan through Amazon for this, which is $50 a year for 250 megabytes of data, rather than $15 a month, this story quotes as the price through AT&T. To me, that signifies a shift in the way people are going to start to think about how they buy these things and how they use them. And the idea that I have this tied to a particular vendor on a month-to-month-to-month basis is about to go out the window. And that may even extend at some point in the future to the actual devices themselves. I've seen a lot of conjecture since this announcement, John, that at some point in time, there will be at least a device from Amazon that doesn't cost anything as long as you agree to certain conditions, the same way as you get a free cell phone if you agree to a 2-year contract.
Well, I've been doing a lot of work with CIOs over the last 6 months around the government, and this bring your own device thing has just exploded. And obviously this kind of advancement and quick change is truly changing the way CIOs think about technology, which is it's not about the hardware anymore. It's not about the device. There's no way the government's ever going to be able to keep up with the new Kindle 2 and then the 3 and then the 4. So let's just get out of that business. Let's let the data be free and open up the floodgates and let people walk around with their own devices. Now, to me, that's going to be just such a massive change in the way the government works. I think there's security concerns, there's other concerns, but I think there's no denying it. This is the way the world's going, right, Dan?
Yeah, I think culturally, when the cloud, which when I was a CIO was this, we were just before that really, has changed the thought processes. Once you got to the point that it wasn't a terrible thing that you didn't own something. So it wasn't this one data center. It was out in this cloud, even if it was a private cloud. Once you grasped that thought, the thought that then the endpoints of the network could be not owned by you became an acceptable thing to discuss, which has always been the issue. I will say that you're exactly right that we're talking about provisioning. I own a Kindle. But I actually don't own a Kindle. I own a book reader. It just happens to be a Kindle. And that's why I buy it, because it's very convenient to me to get the product from Amazon. In terms of, by the way, the flexibility of moving from vendor to vendor, many years ago, I worked for a company that leased printers. And companies would, pay their monthly fee, and a certain percentage of their revenue was gained because people forgot to return the printer. And they put it in closets, but they kept paying. I think the average person will not switch often as long as they can get content, whether it's a 1 or 2 year contract or a no year contract, it's just month to month. People tend to stay where they're comfortable. What Amazon is clearly trying to do is be the one source for anything that's delivered. At one time, the anything was physical, and now it's anything.
The concept here is an age-old sales concept, which is it's easier to keep a customer than to get a new one. And that's essentially what I took away from this announcement about the Fire, is that Amazon wants to make it as easy as possible to put the hardware in your hand so that you will buy your ebooks and you'll buy your video and you'll buy your all, and not the stuff, as you say, Dan, that they ship to your house, but the stuff that you're going to consume right on that tablet, wherever it is that you're going to consume it. And they want to do that so badly that they're willing to give you discounted rates on 3G and 4G connectivity, because when Bezos said this at this announcement, it made total sense to me, and I'd never thought of it before. And I'm paraphrasing the message that he intended, not his exact words. But when I go out and buy one of these things, I don't do it because I want to own this particular device. I want to look at my email or surf the web or be able to do whatever it is that I do on a computer in a convenient way, or if it's the form factor and it's the stuff I want to consume. And this announcement gets at right at that. The iPad and Apple's history generally gets at that. And I don't get the sense that when Google released their little 7-inch tablet recently that they were getting at that. That was a device release. And they didn't talk about Google Play much at all, it didn't seem to me.
Right. All these people have different strategies in terms of what they're trying to control. I do want to say that one other thing is that this is another step on having access to everybody, data to everybody all the time, because becoming these things that you just buy, people are getting used to this. And just a real world example, John and I were talking before the show, and we had a question about one of the what did qualified or non-qualified financial statements. That's referenced in my first article. And John instinctively went to his smartphone, his phone, and he looked it up. And the point is not that he could look it up. The point is, he assumed that wherever he was in the middle of this office, at any point in time, he could look up anything. More and more people think that. That's remarkable. And that's going to affect everybody and every organization that provisions information.
The most telling example of that was from my wife and I at back to school night last night. Shout out to Forest Oak Middle School in Gaithersburg, where my son goes, and he has a terrific lineup of teachers. But as we left, my wife and I were talking about all of the things that my son doesn't have to memorize. His science teacher said, we study the periodic tables, but there's no need to memorize them anymore. Well, why don't you do it anymore? I didn't ask that question, but that was the conversation that my wife and I had. There's no need to memorize that anymore because he can look it up. He carries a smartphone in his pocket, even though he's 12, but they're affordable enough that it's worth it for us to have one for him to be able to stay connected to him, connectivity. And he doesn't need to know it anymore because, as you looked up, a qualified financial statement, the difference between the different kinds, he can look up the periodic tables if he ever needs to.
Yeah, and don't quiz me on either the periodic table or financial statements, neither of which are my specialty. But it's something to think about, though, how we are rewiring our brains. And I am a firm believer it is slowly and pervasively rewiring the way we think. And it's something that I think we need to pay attention to.
John, the second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Dan Mintz. It's from the Washington Post. It's about the release of the new Kindle Amazon Kindle series, and it's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Desenberg's second most important story of the week when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a moment.
Here's Jerry Davis, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Security, VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by Red Hat.
Progress stems around understanding what's taking place in cybersecurity in your own agency and then maturing your agency. I've seen a lot of maturation over the years. Our agencies are getting better and better at cybersecurity, cybersecurity defenses, and understanding what the threats look like and then reporting those out.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Are you concerned about security with federal mandates to move to the cloud? Hi, this is Paul Smith from Red Hat, the most trusted open source company in the world. We work hand in hand with the open source community, making their innovations ready for government, from operating systems to middleware, from Common Criteria to FIPS 140-2, from the STIG to ICD 503. You'll get the assurance you need for your mission from Red Hat. Check us out on redhat.com/government. That's redhat.com/government.
From Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink.
Rafael Boris is the Undersecretary for Management at DHS. He says that management initiatives are helping the agency meet the goal of one DHS.
We're a much more interdependent organization than we were several years ago. The Secretary came in and talked about one DHS, but that wasn't just a slogan or a banner. It really was, you know, how do we make that work? Building that infrastructure, that culture in the organization where we're here to help. We're here to increase the probability of success and reduce the risk.
Quest Government Services is now CenturyLink Government. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and strong financial standing, we are the partner for IT leaders looking toward a stronger, more connected tomorrow. Your link to the future begins here. See the benefits of partnering with us at CenturyLink.com/federal.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The signs of bullying. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you're worried that someone is bullying or being bullied, look for changes in their behavior. Let's talk about the bullies. If a child is aggressive, is overly competitive and aware of popularity, or isn't taking responsibility for their actions, they might be bullying others. Being bullied has warning signs, too. Deborah Temkin is at the U.S. Department of Education.
They become more anxious and depressed and may be more at risk to use substances or miss school.
Parents can be aware of their kids' actions and habits.
Look for behavioral changes in your kids and talk to them about what's going on, because it may be either they're being bullied or they're bullying others, and sometimes they're involved in both. So we need to be very aware of any sort of changes we see in our kids.
Learn more about the signs of bullying and how you can take action to prevent it from happening at stopbullying.gov. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Learn to navigate through tough IT, budget acquisition, and leadership challenges. Meet other senior leaders from government and industry at the 2012 Executive Leadership Conference, hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. This year's program covers mobility, big data, workforce, and government optimization. Join them October 28th through the 30th in Williamsburg. Register now at actgov.org/ELC2012. That's actgov.org/ELC2012.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Dan Mintz of PowerTech. And John Desenberg, your second most important story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Reid and Boehner announced stopgap spending deal. And this is, as you warned us during the break, this is your annual rant, isn't it?
Yeah, this is my annual rant. And as you mentioned, I work for the Performance Institute, where we try to ensure that there's high-performing government. And
I work for the Lack of Performance
Institute. I will be here every year. I could have been here last year or the year before. A matter of fact, Francis, I could have been here for the last 7 years in a row and had this exact same conversation with you, because this has become the way we do business, or maybe I should say the way we don't do business, the way we don't manage our government, the way we don't have planning, the way we don't give people any sense of where they should be spending their money, what they should be spending it on. And by the way, what are their goals for the year? What are their objectives for the year? How can lawmakers, members of Congress, try to get people to become higher performing and actually achieve goals for the taxpayer when people don't know how much money they're going to get, when they're going to get their money? What it leads to is not only uncertainty, but when the money eventually comes in April or May or whenever, then there's 4 months left to try to spend it all. And I don't think there's many people up on Capitol Hill who would be in favor of rushing to spend all your money in the last 3 or 4 months of the year. This is got to be one of the maybe least understood but most destructive things in the federal government, as people can't plan, can't measure, can't perform at the standards that the taxpayer requires. We need multi-year budgets. There's no doubt about it. From a planning perspective, we need to go to multi-year budgets.
I mean this as a serious question. This is not a sarcastic question. Is it any consolation to you that this deal is at least going to be done before the end of the fiscal year, where in the past it's been a patchwork of stuff that has happened at the very super ultimate last minute? I mean, you got to admit, it's not great, but it's at least a teeny little bit of progress, right?
Yeah, they went from failure to a D minus, and I, you know, that's fine.
Well, that's progress.
We don't have those little 30-day pieces, and I think that's only because of the election, and people just had to get this behind them. And, of course, what's happening possibly on January 1st, they just had to do it this way. But you cannot plan in this environment. It's what I do every day with federal agencies, not just here in Washington, but around the country. It's making it almost impossible for people to set goals, achieve goals, have definable strategies. You just can't do it in this manner.
Dan, does this make any difference inside an agency that the CR is at least known ahead of time, this far ahead of time?
So, yeah, I guess a little bit. But when I was a CIO at DOT, there was 1 year where we had to be under a CR for the entire year. And people told me at the time how unusual that was. The problem, John already brought up the main issues. First of all, even in a perfect situation, the federal budget process doesn't work. Because in the commercial environment, in a for-profit environment, you don't do things based on 1 year. You do things based on a three-year plan, and you have some feel for the three-year plan. It may be affected by revenue and things like that, but there's some plan. On the federal basis, you have to come up with budgets 2 years before. You still have to prepare your initial budget 2 years before it's passed, even when it works. And then it's only for 1 year. No one can plan well with that. In this case, the fact that you now have some specificity that'll last 6 months or 5 months rather than 2 months or 1 month is a plus, but it's a very tiny plus. I don't know if Congress would ever be willing to give up the authority level associated with controlling in a minute fashion the budget. But unless they're willing to do some aspects of this over a multi-year budget, have a more intelligent approach to capital investments in terms of planning, it's always going to be a problem.
You know, just two points here. Number one, Congress has demonstrated they don't like to do this. They're not good at it. That yes, this was the original intent, that Congress would create a budget, but we have seen their track record over the last 20 years. They've gotten worse and worse at this, and they appear to have no stomach for it. So let's just get it done with for a 2 or 3 year period, and then they can go back to what they like to do better. The other thing is the administrative burden on the CFO's office and the budget shop of running on this hamster wheel month after month, year after year. It's an incredible burden and cost. It's just no one likes it. Let's just end it.
John Desenberg's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Reid and Boehner announced stopgap spending deal. And you can find it now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by John Desenberg and Dan Mintz, on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over a million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Sparco.com's past performance ranks them with the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. They hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies with budget-sensitive pricing. They are an IBM-certified premier business partner for servers and storage solutions, and their offerings include IBM software product lines such as licensing and renewals. Because they understand your needs, they have extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please call 1-800-840-8400 or visit sparco.com, sparco.com.
A special investigator flashes his badge and asks to be let into the hotel room of a GSA official at a training conference. The GSA official calls it a late-night ambush. What really happened at last month's GSA Smart Pay conference? Federal News Radio's Jason Miller has an exclusive report detailing the GSA Inspector General Conference investigation and what happened in its wake. It's all part of Federal News Radio's ongoing coverage, Shake Up at GSA. Only at federalnewsradio.com. Search GSA Shake Up.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Kevin D'Souza's Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University. He has been studying the merits of Challenge.gov.
One of our recommendations of our report is as agencies think about running challenges, they need to have very clear evaluation guidelines up front and make sure that they know exactly how do they want to implement the output.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected this week by John Desenberg and Dan Mintz. And we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Mintz, is from Forbes.com. The headline is Local Governments Ready for Big Data? Question mark. And as you read this piece, Dan, what's your answer to the question mark? And I guess the question for us is the federal government ready for big data?
So the answer is probably not ready. But the first question, of course, the interesting thing is this again, is what is big data? I mean, because this is a little like cloud computing. When it became popular, everything became cloud computing.
Well, at least the name, though, is not ethereal like cloud computing was.
Yes. In an article that's referenced in this one from O'Reilly, they mentioned that the reasoning behind big data is that everything's on the Internet. The Internet has a lot of data. Therefore, everything is big data. And in fact, that to some extent, that's sort of what's going on. One of the issues here is this becomes so the reason they have a problem in terms of saying yes is this becomes another competing priority that they may not be ready for. The implications of big data are dramatic. First of all, coming back to some of the last article, at least that I had talked about, which is the pervasive availability of devices that, in fact, are generating and accessing data. This is a dramatic change. So if you're now going to focus on the implications of big data, you have to take into account it's growing enormously, and you have to take into account that everyone has access to it. And that's an enormous change. And the other thing is it's coming from non-standard sources everywhere. You know, local government, you have the situation, you know, they're automating electric meters for smart meter reading, which is being done, in fact, in this area. There's a number of articles and things like that. The other thing, if I can say a more positive part to it, on the other hand, we were talking earlier about there's the famous Donald Rumsfeld known unknowns and unknown unknowns. One of the problems with a lot of planning and things like that is it does help you with the known unknowns, the things you are aware of that you have to find but you don't yet understand. But planned activities and structured activities don't help you with the unknown unknowns, the things you would find if you did a random walk through information, which we're starting to lose to some extent. Having big data, all this data collected, starts to begin the opportunity to discover those as part of the system. And that's very interesting.
But sifting them out is proving to be what the agency people that I talk to are having a hard time with, John.
Yeah, the correlations. It's all about correlations. You know, we're all baseball fans here, and we've had the chance to go around the country and talking to local governments about this in the last couple of years. We all have seen the movie Moneyball, and I like to talk about the fact that every team had access to the same data. So why was Oakland so much better than all the other teams if they all had the same data? The reason was the ability to make correlations, basically asking the right questions. It used to be the issue was we don't have the data. Now the issue is we have so much data, we need to start figuring out the right questions.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, Dan, is the problem is not the data. The problem is parsing the data or organizing it in such a way that you can make sense out of it and find value in it.
Yes, and that, in fact, is the application, if you want to, the technical application issue is how do you develop applications and architect software so that you can go after this data, much of it unstructured, much of it that was put in without all this thinking, and pull out what you want.
That's why I'm hopeful that maybe we won't see what we saw, as you alluded to, with cloud computing, where everybody all of a sudden is in the big data business, because it's not quite as simple as just rearranging some architecture that you have and putting a bunch of servers in a room and being able to connect that to a pipe. It's a little more complicated than that.
I think there's at least two factors that are going to make it very interesting in the governmental space, including the federal and the local space. First is going back to, we talked about DHS at the beginning and how it was difficult for them to allocate different programs. There's a lot of activity right now around performance measurement of programs, not just the process, are we doing it efficiently, but is it having an actual result? Are they effective? When you have big data, it gives you the ability potentially to be able to now start to manage the effectiveness of programs where you never could before. And there's a lot of incentive to do that. If it happens, big if, that actually may help to solve some of those problems in trying to come up with where should you spend your money, which also may help John's problem, giving some more insight to budget and appropriation staff to be able to make these decisions, which they're obviously reluctant to make collectively.
Quick story on this, Francis. Yeah. Real quick, one second. The city of Chicago has a free app. You keep it in your pocket, and it detects when you go over a bump. And when more than 30 people go over the same bump in the same spot, the city of Chicago gets a notice that says, there's probably a pothole there. Go check. It's amazing what they can put in people's pocket.
So I'm going to guess then the question I had for you was, are you as optimistic about the potential as Dan is, since this is what you do for a living? I'm going to guess from that anecdote that your answer to that's yes.
Well, the other thing that people like in Boston and in Chicago are doing is they're letting the data be free and letting people come up with new ways to deal with it. So, for instance, the city of Baltimore put out the data on where people get parking tickets. Well, some enterprising young guy put up a website turning the data around, telling people where they wouldn't get a parking ticket, which then, of course, led Baltimore to put more people on the street in those spots. It's a cat and mouse game. The point is we need to let the data be free, and there's a ton of smart people who want to help figure this stuff out for us. Let's let them get at it.
Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week is from Forbes.com. The headline is Local Governments Ready for Big Data? And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by John Desenberg, is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Dave Noble with IAAIS. We help people who live with vision loss. That's why we collaborated with Best Buy and the Insignia brand to create the Narrator, a new HD radio receiver with specific functions for visually impaired people. In addition to bookmarking and accessing extra channels, the Narrator tells you what buttons you've pressed.
Tune up.
We believe everyone will love the Narrator and encourage you to visit HDRadio.com and BestBuy.com to learn more.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
What do we know about teenagers? Well, one thing we do know. All teenagers think they're invincible. But there's something else we need to know. When texting while driving, any driver is 23 times more likely to have an accident. It's that serious. At AT&T, we've launched a national campaign against texting while driving called It Can Wait. We're bringing driving simulators to high schools across the country to give teenagers firsthand experience at how dangerous texting while driving can be. And we've created a free app called Drive Mode that sends out an auto response to incoming texts to help curb the urge to answer. This is going to take all of us working together. So go to itcanwait.com, sign the pledge, spread the word, and help put an end to texting while driving. Because no text is worth the risk. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Dream Foundation makes dreams come true for adults when a cure is no longer an option. The first and largest national wish-granting organization for adults facing life-threatening illness, Dream Foundation has been touching lives, meeting needs, reuniting families, and providing peace at the end of life's journey since 1994. Reston Limousine is a proud supporter of the Dream Foundation and the more than 2,500 dreams they serve each year. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit dreamfoundation.org.
Learn to navigate through tough IT, budget, acquisition, and leadership challenges. Meet other senior leaders from government and industry at the 2012 Executive Leadership Conference, hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. This year's program covers mobility, big data, workforce, and government optimization. Join them October 28th through the 30th in Williamsburg. Register now at actgov.org/ELC2012. That's actgov.org/ELC2012.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by John Desenberg and Dan Mintz. And John, your number one story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Democrats mostly ignore feds in platform. I didn't think we would be able to get to the conventions on the countdown, but you managed to take us there. What did you see or not see that you expected to see or not see in the platforms from either of the conventions?
I guess I wanted to use this as a jumping off point, Francis, which is by this time in the campaign cycle, each of the last 4 years, we saw management agendas from both candidates. We heard them talking about their plans for the government, how they would manage it better, what they would do differently, how they would manage it more efficiently. I don't care if it was George W. Bush. He made a famous speech in August of 2000 when he ran. Obama had a pretty flushed out management agenda by this time 4 years ago. Today, nothing. Dead silence. We've actually spoken with the Romney campaign. The Romney campaign assured us that, yes, he has a plan. No, he doesn't want to talk about it. This is very upsetting, I think, to all of us here in Washington, which is this is a critical time. We know there are going to be cuts. We know there are going to be a lot of changes. If there was ever a campaign cycle where we needed to hear a management agenda and a sensible plan, it's this campaign cycle, and yet we've heard nothing. It's disturbing, and it really points to the fact that, you know, this negative impression of government, and we saw the Gallup numbers that came out this week, record low opinion of the federal government, it seeped into these campaigns in a way where they don't even feel, I guess, that they can talk about managing the government, and they're just going to not talk about it anymore, maybe hoping it'll go away. The whole thing is like sticking your head in the sand at the moment where we really need them to pay attention. And we're told there was a small article that said Romney is in favor of pay for performance. Well, all that article basically said was he had had some experience with pay for performance in the private sector. He said nothing about the government. So there is nothing out there. They seem to be avoiding this subject, and it's a little scary.
My question, though, is if the candidates did put out some kind of government management agenda, other than the small group of people like us that care about this stuff, would anybody pay any attention to it anyway? Dan, do you think anybody would even look at it once we paid attention to it for 2 or 3 days?
No. And I think it actually represents a broader problem. The faith of the average voter in institutions in general, in poll after poll, is way down. Almost every public or almost any institution. The problem with that, therefore, means that they're choosing between that none of it has credibility because no one thinks it'll do a difference. And just on the so, for example, even though I'm not saying anything about a current politician of any kind, attacking your opponent by being corrupt, the average person thinks politicians are sort of corrupt. So it's a fault. It's like, okay, they are, but so are you. In this case, the problem is no one thinks any of the institutions are representative. No one thinks any of the institutions can be managed. So the fact that this person says I'll manage better than the other person doesn't have credibility, even if it was true.
You know, I guess my point, what I would say to if I could sit down with the candidates would be, if the federal government and federal employees are costing us so much and you think it's such a travesty that it's so expensive, et cetera, then doesn't it deserve a well-thought-out plan to fix it? If it's that expensive and that costly for all of us, doesn't that mean we should be making this a priority to fix? I mean, isn't that just common sense management if it's that bad?
And the answer is yes. But as Francis pointed out, no one cares. So the problem is that the candidates are going to talk about things that they believe are going to move that very small percentage of undecided voters. It feels like the fight that's going on is a policy fight and an argument, and I'm not going to go into detail, an argument over the direction of the government from a policy point of view. I don't think the people who are undecided are thinking, well, I'm going to vote for the person who'll be most efficient. If they thought somebody would change their vote on that issue, I can promise you
when we have a situation where we're down to literally 2% of the population in what, 6 to 8 to maybe 9 states at the most. I mean, even those states that are called swing states are down to essentially 47-48 on the other side. So it's just sliced so thin. I wish we could go on. We're starting to run out of time. John, your most important federal news story of the week is Democrats mostly ignore feds in platform. All of our stories in the Federal News Countdown are linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Gentlemen, it's always great to see both of you, and it's great to have both of you on the program today. I hope we can line it up and you'll come back real soon.
Thanks so much. And Natitude.
Yes. Fix your Natitude. The second hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming up next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.